You're listening to Vatican Radio.
200 years ago, on the feast of the conversion of St. Paul in 1816, a small group of men came together to create an apostolic community and do just what St. Paul himself sought to do: preach the good news of Jesus Christ to the poor and most abandoned. That group of men is known today as the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate, one of the largest missionary religious orders of the Church, numbering nearly 4,000 priests and religious brothers. The Oblates of Mary Immaculate were founded on February the 25th, 1816, in Aix-en-Provence, in post-revolutionary southern France, in response to the deplorable situation of the Church in the countryside after the war. Father Louis Logan, OMI, is the Superior General of the Oblates of Mary Immaculate and a permanent member of the Vatican's Congregation for the Evangelization of Peoples. He spoke to Devon Watkins about the Oblates' bicentennial anniversary.
We're celebrating 200 years of the foundation of our congregation. We began in Aix-en-Provence 200 years ago, January 25th. There was Eugene de Maisonade, who we call our founder, and four other oblates who came together in a small little dump in Aix-en-Provence, an old Carmelite convent. These men, especially Eugene de Maisonade, saw the devastation of the church in France after the revolution. The church had all but died, and he uses the word often, deplorable state of the church. So he wanted to do something about that. And one of the first things he said, he wanted to have a community of priests who would preach missions. He had three aims, really: to work with young people, to work with the prisoners, and to preach missions to the poor, especially in the rural areas. So they came together to live a regular life. The community life would be a path of virtue. They would grow in holiness, and he always connects that to the effectiveness of preaching, that this group of priests who would strive for holy life would be more effective preaching the gospel, working with young people and prisoners. So that began on January 25th, the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul in 1816. Later on, the name, 10 years after that, the name becomes the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate, which is our name today. But our roots, our beginning is in as the Missionaries of Provence in 1816, 200 years ago.
After 200 years, what would be your main charism?
You know, we always, we often say to preach the gospel to the poor, kind of the work is preaching the gospel to the poor. I believe the charism also includes what is the soul, what are we, who are we, you know, as missionaries. And that goes back to St. Eugene's experience of Christ on the cross, having experienced God's love, God's salvation as a gift that we don't deserve, as unconditional love. We're motivated, we're urged, we're thrown into preaching the gospel, and especially to the poor. And we do that in many ways. Eugene, as I said, it was young people, it was prisoners, and it was the rural poor. They were forgotten by the church, they were neglected. And today, we work with the poor in many different ways, directly preaching the gospel, but also in places like Asia, where we're a very small minority. We help Muslim people or Hindu people with education, with health, with getting their rights, tribal peoples especially, that are disrespected in their own land. Oblates are with them, helping them preserve their way of life and their dignity and their humanity. We're faithful to the founder's inspiration, but I would say in a much broader way, responding to what the church needs wherever we go. I'd say, you know, we go to Asia or Africa, Latin America, North America, or other places of Europe, and there's other needs, and we try to respond to those needs, bringing that love of Christ and touching the lives of the poor.
So it's very particular in every place that you go. It's not just a general mission that you just do one thing, but you're dynamic, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. You know, a big part of Vatican II, but even before that, reading the signs of the times, we're sent to a reality, and it's amazing, even before Vatican II, when I my visits around the world, like going to Sri Lanka and seeing how much oblates helped, you know, the local people and the culture. It wasn't specifically, let's say, religious, but good human values, good Christian values, such as the dignity of people. Oblates were doing that. I'd say part of that charism you asked about would also be, there's different elements of it, closeness to the people, closeness to the poor. We feel, what is the suffering, what is the situation of the poor? And we have always tried to respond to that. We go, of course, to implant or to begin the church and to help it develop. But in doing that, we look at also what are the human needs of people. It might be farming, it might be food, it might be electricity. And we try to help them do the things that will make their life more dignified. I guess today in theology you speak of the context is so important. And oblates have, throughout our history, I think, been sensitive to the context, and that shapes our mission.
What kind of preparations have you been doing for this big event?
You know, we've stressed spiritual preparation. We had the chapter in 2010 was a call to a profound personal and community conversion to Jesus Christ. And at first, many people said, oh, you know, this is saying the same old stuff. But I think since 2010, we began to see more deeply that conversion to Jesus Christ changes our lives and our witness becomes a genuine witness of the gospel. Pope Francis, even before him, Pope Benedict and John Paul II, but Pope Francis has said this over and over, to live the joy of the gospel, we have to meet Jesus. And at the beginning of Evangelii Gaudium, at the beginning there, almost in the first or second or third paragraph, he says, every day we should ask for a deeper experience of Jesus Christ in our lives. And he talks over and about continual conversion. It's the story of our lives. So the 2010 chapter, that was the theme. So as we began to talk about how to prepare for this 200th anniversary, you could have parties, you could print calendars, you could print books, you could have t-shirts made. And we said it has to be focused on a conversion in my life and in our community. So we organized a three-year preparation. Each year has had a theme. And two pillars of the 3 years. One is sharing our faith, which is a way of deepening our brotherhood, our communion as brothers. It creates spiritual intimacy among us. It helps us live better a community life and to support each other in our faith. And, you know, I always say Pope Benedict had the year of faith, I think because, I shouldn't say this, huh? Because priests don't have faith anymore, you know, especially priests. Maybe brothers, maybe sisters, but priests and bishops, you wonder sometimes. So I always think Pope Benedict knew what he was doing. The people of God were, you know, celebrating faith, but priests and bishops need to hear that. So sharing faith, it might sound Protestant, it might sound charismatic, but in addition to discussing politics, football, the weather, theology, I share what has been and what is my journey with Christ, with others. It encourages, it challenges one another, you know, it makes you believe more, you know, that the Spirit is working. That has been my experience. So that has been one of the pillars, huh? To get together, I would hope we would do it weekly, but we asked for once or twice a month. And many communities are doing it once a month. Some are doing it twice a month. Very few communities are doing it every week. But even if it's once a month, I think it's been a positive experience. I know it has been. And if we could continue in this line, I think it helps us in conversion. The other pillar, one is faith sharing. The other one is then after talking about our faith and sharing it, what could change in me? What could change in us? So concrete signs of conversion, to talk about that and to see together, for example, I mean, it could be a million different things. Maybe we will use the car less and take public transportation in some countries, you know. I mean, in Italy, we mostly use public transportation. But that would be like concern with the environment and a simple life. It might be a community that where they don't pray together. that they'll begin to pray together once a day. That's a conversion, a concrete sign. It might be a community, maybe they pray together, but they never get together to talk about how is our life together? You know, what do we need to do to be better brothers in the community? So maybe once a month they'll meet to talk about their community. It might be an oblate who says, I will visit the elderly oblates, you know, once a month or once a week. Could we take care more of the elderly by visiting them? And so those would be concrete signs. So during the 3 years, those were the two pillars, sharing our faith and seeing concretely what could I do in my life and in our community life to show we're in a journey of conversion. So the first year we had was on our community life and the vow of chastity, because they go together. Chastity is about, do I communicate with you? Do I respect you in community? As well as all the other things we know, but often we forget that chastity is, do I forgive? Or do I, you know, speak to other people? Do I respect other people? Last year was ongoing formation, that throughout our lives we need to grow intellectually, spiritually, morally, as human beings, our pastoral skills, our missionary ability, we need to grow, and the vow of poverty and simplicity, and the Pope's encyclical, helped us a lot in that way. And this year, the third year, which began December 8th now, is on mission. How do we live mission and the vow of obedience, which is connected to mission? And looking at mission, some of the things that I think we need to do are each unit, each like province, mission, or delegation has to have a mission vision and a few priorities. I know, you know, when I was in the States, we had 13 priorities, and each priority had about 5 or 6 sub-priorities. There's too much, and with less personnel or personnel that are older, you can't do it all. So to have more foci on where, as a province, we have 4 aims, you know, to have a project to evaluate it, that's something that would help us be more faithful to our mission.
So this bicentennial is falling within the Jubilee Year of Mercy. If you could characterize it in one of the works of mercy, the work of the oblates, which spiritual or corporal work of mercy would best embody the oblate spirit?
You know what I was thinking about? The Holy Father has given us, the word I use is like icons, when he was washing the feet of the prisoners. You know, that was almost at the beginning of his ministry. He was in Lampedusa, and then he was with the unemployed in another city in Italy, standing with the unemployed, listening to the refugees, and meeting different religious leaders. The Holy Door in Africa. Oh, I wanted to mention, too, with the youth in Brazil, shake up the church, his ability to listen and to relate to the young people. Maybe, I don't know, I keep thinking of the prisoners. Right from St. Eugene's time until today, we have oblates who are full-time in prison ministry, but I would say almost everywhere, oblates in their parish work or if they're in schools, there always seems to be a contact with prisoners. To visit the prisoners is one of the corporal works of mercy. I mean, in a sense, I was beginning to say all of them were involved in doing. It happened to me in Buffalo. It was Annunciation, then now it's Our Lady of Hope Parish. I was in the rectory, and the lady, the secretary, said, oh, there's somebody on the phone. They've fallen away from the church, and their father died, and they can't get a priest or anybody to go. Would one of you go over to the family? Well, Marty McMahon was out the door to go, you know. The same thing happened to me in, I was visiting Sri Lanka. I was with a group of oblates, and somebody said, oh, there's a family here. They don't have anyone to help them mourn the loss of their mother. And one of the oblates said, I'll go over. I think they were Buddhists, you know, burying the dead. Often it gets very tense with people. I mean, let's say with the church, do you go to church? The secretary often tells people, no, you know, the priests are too busy, or you don't belong to this parish. And it's so sad at that time, you know, to not have anybody. And the oblates are available to bury the dead, to visit the prisoners, to visit the sick. So it's hard to pick one corporal work of mercy or spiritual work of mercy that we don't have, you know. I think especially of the prisoners. It seems we have our fingers in all of them. I think it was the Polish scholastics asked me to write something for the Year of Mercy, and I said the founder was the apostle of mercy. You know, I think from his experience of the cross, Christ's unconditional love, his ministry then became less severe, less rigid, less Jansenistic, and he wanted to bring this love of the Savior to people, and oblates were close to people, so it's all out of that love, that warmth of God. He becomes a warm minister of God's mercy. I think it's right at the heart of the charism is mercy.
That was Father Louis Logan, Superior General of the Missionary Oblates of Mary Immaculate, speaking to Devon Watkins.